WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
One of the many Soviet émigrés in this country who's spent the past couple of days glued to the TV watching the coup is writer Mikhail Yussel. Yussel emigrated to America 5 years ago and now teaches at the University of Minnesota. His first collection of English short stories has just been published. It's called Every Hunter Wants to Know, and it's about growing up in Leningrad. In Yussel's latter Leningrad days, he wrote stories and translated American poetry and fiction for the Underground or Samizdat publications. Yussel told me he was followed by the KGB for about 6 months before he left his country. Yussel's parents still live in Leningrad. He was unable to reach them during the coup. When he heard the news this morning that the coup had apparently failed, he was very relieved, but not surprised.
I had no doubts whatsoever that that would how it turn out. That would be how it would turn out. But it probably now feels even better than if this hadn't happened in the first place, because now there is this sense of things having been cleaned somehow, that those people having exposed their hand, and now nothing will be like it used to, basically.
Was there a part of you that really wished you were in the Soviet Union these past couple of days, maybe especially today, watching the tanks turn around?
No, I didn't have the feeling that I need to be there, but I felt very strongly that I would very much like to know exactly what was going on with my parents. And at one paranoid moment, I had this vision of scores and scores of KGB people walking from one apartment to another with a long list of people whose relatives are abroad and who have made themselves rash statements and probably arresting people and rounding people up. And I had that nightmare, and that was the only moment when I really wanted to be in Leningrad somehow for a very short period of time, just to get my parents out of there.
Now, your parents grew up in a more fearful time. Do you think that they would be, and that other people of their generation would be, more reluctant to take a stand now than younger people would be who grew up closer to the reforms?
Of course. And as a matter of fact, it was interesting to read in one of newspapers' report from the streets of Moscow, and how quickly people feel, some people slip back into this habit of fear. People are refusing to give their last names to Western correspondents, saying they don't want to court trouble. And here in San Francisco, there is one of the San Francisco State University's public channels carries a Soviet news program, Vremya, every night. And last night and the night before that, I was watching Soviet television news program, and eerie throwback to 6 years ago, how easily and how comfortably the anchor persons, people in the streets, some people in the streets, and how quickly they returned to the language of the late 70s and early 80s. It's as if this distance had been just whatever happened in the last 6 years. It just underscored the fragility of the changes of the last 6 years.
When you talk about the language that preceded those changes, what kind of language are you talking about?
Oh, this Orwellian newspeak again, this state committee issuing decrees written in this monstrous language of Soviet newspapers circa late 70s. Again, this patriotism, Soviet people, patriotic efforts of Soviet people, deep satisfaction experienced by Soviet people at the sight of tanks on the streets of Moscow, this kind of thing.
There's a selection from your new collection of stories, Every Hunter Wants to Know, that I'd like you to read. And this is a... Is this an autobiographical story? This is a story that the mother tells the son about the grandfather who was a Stalinist. Is this a story your mother told you?
Yes, it was. This particular story was the first that I wrote in English, and it's the only strictly autobiographical. It better be called an essay. That's why it precedes the prefaces the book, as it were. And
now, your grandfather had been a Stalinist.
Not exactly, but he was sure, but not in a sense that is assigned to this word. He was not for Stalinist purges, or he was not standing for anything that Stalin. But he was an old Bolshevik, basically. So that, which means that he always went with the line of the party.
Let me ask you to read the passage from the story.
Okay. My mother once told me an interesting, revealing story about her parents and Stalin. The way I remember it is that when the news of Stalin's death was broken on the radio, that ubiquitous black dish on a white wall in the kitchen in March 1953, Stalin had been dead for at least a week by that time, my grandfather burst into uncontrollable tears. The whole country was weeping. Sobbing, he walked from the kitchen into his and my grandmother's room in their Moscow communal apartment, where my grandmother, upon hearing the same news on the radio, was rejoicing. "Thank God, at last, that butcher," she exclaimed. She was a shrewd but also a very cautious woman, normally the wife of a party functionary. My grandfather had always thought, of course, that she too loved Stalin like everybody else. Not loved, not even adored, but rather cherished, worshipped him. As it turned out, he discovered she never did, and now under the influence of an overwhelming moment, she got carried away. She must have thought that my grandfather was still in the kitchen, but he was standing teary-eyed behind her back in their room, ready to share her grief. Her exclamation hit him hard. He was flabbergasted. "I can't believe my ears. I've lived with an enemy of the people all these years," he erupted. I should mention here that ears and years don't rhyme in Russian, and his words didn't sound funny to either of them. My grandmother turned around, bit her tongue, and cursed her stupidity. But it was too late. He had already left, dramatically slamming the door shut behind him, gone forever. For a year, I was told. He went away for a year. A year doesn't sound right to me. Too epic. A day, maybe, or even possibly a week.
When did your mother tell you this story, and what did she see as the meaning of the story?
Well, I was 10, I think, around that time. She wanted to underscore the point, or rather to explain why my father and my grandfather had at times strained relations, when my father would actually needle and my grandfather and comment on certain development on TV, make a political joke that would drive my grandfather up the wall. So she would explain, say something that you need to be understanding around old people like grandfather, people of rigid beliefs, and people of principle who are unlike us.
In hearing the story about your grandfather and how, even after Stalin's death, he really mourned him. Does that give you insights into why people would remain hardliners, communist hardliners today?
Oh, sure. I suspect that their reasons might have been different than my grandfather's would have been. My grandfather had a dream, and he felt that of the worldwide revolution, and that was the dream that he tried to carry through his life. He was one of those Jewish teenagers from small towns in the Ukraine and Belarus who flocked to Petersburg, to Moscow and Leningrad in the early 20s with this idea of worldwide revolution in their hearts. People who were on the screens of our TVs just a couple of days ago, the state committee on the state of emergency in the Soviet Union, this committee of eight people, they're nothing like my grandfather used to be. They're nothing like old Bolsheviks. These are the people that have nostalgia for old good times, basically. And I can understand, of course, how they can be nostalgic. They were fighting for their political survival. I think they're regretting it deeply at this particular moment when they're roaming the mountains of Kyrgyzstan, trying to cross the border with China and asking themselves what it was that forced them to do this. But I don't think that they were particularly ideologically indoctrinated people. They were just people who were about to lose their jobs for good.
The people behind the coup, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, they were people who had power, lost it, and wanted it back again.
Wanted respect back, wanted power back, wanted fear back, wanted the simplicity, the uncomplicated the lifestyle back, wanted to see fear in people's eyes, wanted to see West go away. They wanted all host of things that they were not about to get.
My guest is Soviet emigre writer Mikhail Yussel. He has a new collection of short stories called Every Hunter Wants to Know. More with Yussel in 60 seconds. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Soviet emigre writer Mikhail Yussel. He emigrated from Leningrad 5 years ago and now teaches at the University of Minnesota. What were the breaks for you as a writer in the United States? Did you have any connections when you came here?
No, I didn't have connections. I knew some people. I had their phone numbers, and I knew that some of them knew some writers. But that to be in touch with writers, I knew that I needed to write something, and I kept trying to write in Russian, and somehow it did not work. It was not working, and because I was too excited, I was too nervous, I was too upset, I was too agonized, basically, to keep writing in Russian, and so I almost started writing in English as a lark, almost to prove to myself that I could do it, to put a distance between myself and the language and my past. Somehow, English has become ultimately the glass wall between myself and my past. This estrangement that this obstacle that every writer needs, basically. I think I'm overdoing it in the word basically. So, at first, I tried to write, and I could literally see how I was translating things in my mind from Russian into English, and it did not work. But I kept trying to write, and eventually I wrote two short pieces and sent them to a graduate writing program, to the graduate writing program at the University of New Hampshire, and I was accepted there. And from that point on, it was all much easier, basically. It was all more or less normal writer's life, I would imagine, just working hard on your stories, writing and rewriting. And I had a feeling that I found myself in English, which was an important, very, very liberating feeling.
I know this is a question that's impossible to answer, but have you thought about what you might have been doing, how you might have behaved these past couple of days had you still been living in the Soviet Union?
Sure. I was thinking about it. As a matter of fact, I was listening into myself, and I was trying to find within myself traces of fear and a familiar sense of mixture of fear, anger, resentment, and sure enough, I found it all in myself very quickly. And I think that had I stayed in the Soviet Union, well, I'd be huddled with my friends somewhere in the kitchen, ranting and raving against those unfortunate human beings, those old-timers. But I might even be in the streets somewhere surrounding the building of parliament, but I'm not sure. I'm not 100% certain that I'd be there.
What are your plans for tonight? Are you going to be getting together with friends and watching CNN more? Will you be on the phone trying to call your family?
Both. Sure, I'll be watching. I'll be watching television, and I'll be trying to get through to the Soviet Union.
Well, I thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you very much, Terry.
Mikhail Yussel's new collection of short stories is called Every Hunter Wants to Know. It's published by Norton.